How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is March 19, 2014, figure4online.com/WrestlingObserver.com, and we are joined today by the hardcore legend. Mick Foley is here on the line. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Mick, how you doing?
I'm doing good. A little tired. Just got home from the largest Santa Claus convention in the country. And so I'm a little worn out, but I'm feeling pretty good and really excited about WrestleMania and everything that goes along with it.
Now, it's any day now, it's going to be spring, and you're still at a Santa convention. How often annually are there major Santa Claus conventions around the world?
Let me see. This is probably the biggest one. They do this every couple of years in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, and then I've got one in May. I've got the Northeast Santas in May, and then the International Brotherhood of Real Bearded Santas in Tampa later on in May, and then I believe I will have. I'm gonna return to a very arduous Santa Claus school, 4-day school in Denver in August, and then I should be good for the season. So,
now we've talked about this International Real Bearded Santas before. And you've talked about how the bearded Santas will sometimes look down on the not real.
Oh, yeah. And they fight shooters,
the shooters and the workers.
Yeah.
It is so much like wrestling. Especially there was an, I was told I was sitting in the same chair. And my son Mickey was playing video games like he is now, and one of the Santas reached out to me and told me that there was going to be an uproar over the rainbow that one of our Santas was wearing in one of the promotional posters, and he's a gay Santa. And when I was told that the rain, he must have said 50 times during a 25-minute talk there was going to be an uproar. And you guys know my personality. Like, I don't want to be told what I can and can't say and who I can and cannot be friends with and what I can and cannot do. As far, I'm not going to have people tell me what can be in the movie. And I've really taken on an active role and really enjoyed it. And I'll go to the director's house for 10, 12 hours at a time, and help shape the movie. And we really think it's coming along good, but there's, some guys, what I called them out on was the fact it's not about the rainbow. It was about the patch and about him being gay. And so I wrote a piece just for the Santa community regarding the uproar. And I was fully prepared to go into Gatlinburg as the most hated man in the Santa community for taking a stand for Santa Jim. And everything turned out to be fine. But there's a lot of division even among the bearded Santas. And that's, believe it or not, one of the main concerns is the director, Tommy Avalone, he really got inside with what is known as the Santa Wars. And there was concern that a lot of people were coming out of it looking bad. And I think he's done a really good job at telling a fascinating story without making... he points out the ridiculousness of it and how surreal it is. And hopefully it's done in a way that will allow even the Santas involved to say, hey, I guess this is kind of ridiculous.
At the end of the day, you're all Santa. You're supposed to be spreading cheer. I mean, this judgment about other Santas. My buddy yesterday was talking about how his wife wouldn't allow him to grow a beard. So this poor guy, if he wanted to be a Santa, he would be a shunned Santa.
He wanted to be a traditional order of the mystical Santas, which is a fancy way for saying a guy with a fake beard.
Sure.
But it's... You know what? It's a fascinating. It really, I think it's like beyond the mat with Santas. And Tommy was very conscious of it not being beyond the mat with Santas. And I'm saying, what's wrong with it being, beyond the mat with Santas?
You want the climax to be where like the family's all sitting there watching the video tape going like,
no.
Oh my God, we acted like this.
They're all watching a surveillance video of the mall.
Well, you know what? There is something to be said, and this is the struggle whether we go for the feel good ending or the realistic ending. And it's really these guys. It seems ridiculous to some people in the outside world that like that you guys cover wrestling the way you do, that people take it as seriously as we do. And so it's like the Santa world, you know. It's like, you know, of course it seems strange from the outside looking in. But, you know, this is their passion, you know. And I think one of the things the movies does is detail, like, just how big that, you know, whether it's at 6 weeks or that 1 month, or in my, you know, my case, I make like 10 appearances a year. And you've seen, you've heard me, you've probably seen my writing about, I was devastated when I was written off Raw. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. I mean, that was what changed my relationship with the company, honestly. And I thought they knew how badly I wanted to do it and was flown out specifically to do it. So when it didn't happen, it was really a game changer for me as far as what I believe my role in the company was. I want to follow up by saying I really do love the company. You know, like I really go to bat for them, and you know, I think the show has been great lately, and I think I may have to admit that if this was the plan all along, that they knew better than I did. But there are times, you know, when I take issue with certain things, and I'm not shy about expressing that.
Now, you were really adamant about the Daniel Bryan stuff. I mean, like over the last couple of months. I mean, it was you got really emotionally invested in his quest to win the championship. You know, to the point that you wrote about it several times. And
yeah,
I mean, it's funny. I mean, I think most fans that watch weekly kind of are like that. But you were, this was like a big this. You know, it's like you've been through, you know, decades and decades of being a fan and being in the business, but you really got into this one. I mean, is there any specific, you know, thing that you would say as to why, or just,
you know,
like,
I think because I watch it as a, you know, with my family as a fan. And honestly, I don't even know Daniel that well. You know, like, I know Bree better than I know Daniel. I mean, I like Daniel, and I talk to him all the time. It's not like we're on the phone conspiring. I've been told he appreciates me going to bat for him, and I think looking at it now with the onset of the network, it kind of changes what you can expect from a pay-per-view. Like, I think when you're only getting Gene George $9.95 a month for everything, they can afford to disappoint people, you know, to leave people waiting and wanting more. But you know, as a guy who did the pre-show a couple times and stuck around for the entirety of the show, and as a dad who buys the shows, I thought, man, there's like been like five straight shows where people are leaving either disappointed or outright angry, and I sensed we were at like a tipping point where not just the hardcore fans or the internet fans, but the mainstream fans were going to, you know, start losing interest, and I think, honestly, that, you know, it's kind of like the 24-hour news where you want things to happen right away, and that sometimes, you know, history is does chart its course over a longer period of time, and it could be that the timing will end up perfect on this one.
As it turns out, if things go the way we expect.
Well, you know what? I always thought, and I wrote a piece where I said, look, for me, the feud was always as good as a title match. And up until the night that I won the title, I never put any importance on titles because I never thought that I was going to win them. You know, or win the one. You know, I tag titles and those type of things. And if it was an independent title and there was a W in a, you know, among the three initials, chances are I held that at one time or other. But when it came to the big title, I never thought it was in the cards, so I never put any degree of importance on it. But I thought that, you know, fans were invested in Daniel's journey, and like it could only end with that moment at WrestleMania with the 75,000 people chanting yes. I think Monday night. And I just wrote about this today. Like, I think we all forgot how good a heel Triple H can be. And I think Stephanie has really become a great you know, like a really effective authority figure. And even when, you know, after he gave him the pedigree and I see him in the ring, I'm thinking they have to kiss. They have to kiss. You know, they have to kiss. And I think Daniel is suddenly, I mean, you guys can probably come up with, you know, ideas here and tell me where I'm wrong, but I don't think we've seen him in one of these situations, you know, the big feud with the climactic payoff.
Not him, no.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy known for having great matches, and he was really entertaining with Kane, and we want to see him win that title. We're emotionally invested in him, but he hasn't had the history of, like, the classic feuds. And so I think, and this is where I'm admitting that if everything goes well on Mania, that I will have been incorrect in wanting to rush things along. But, you see a situation where he and Triple H could have a great match and leave Daniel battered and beaten heading into should he win, he heads into this WWE World Heavyweight Championship match, in a weakened state, and it could lead for a really emotional conclusion to the big event. And I hate to keep admitting that I'll probably, you know, that if all this happens, I will have been wrong all along. But maybe enthusiasm like mine may have changed some minds. I don't know. And B, if it didn't, it led many people to believe that I was in on an angle all along. And I said, that may be, but I have not been aware of it. You know, like.
So when you wrote your blog, it wasn't like they called and said, Mick, calm down, buddy.
No, the only thing I was told, the only response that I was given, I texted the big three, and this is a story I've been telling at a couple of my shows, that I don't bother WWE about their content. You know, I don't. There's been three times I've sent emails. I had an idea for me. I had an idea for Ziggler. I had another idea. Yeah, this is over the course of 3 years. But I've never called up and commented or texted and commented about a pay-per-view and left anything negative and told people what I thought should have been done. But I contacted the three main people, and I had told Bree. I had texted and I said, man, I just feel heartbroken for Daniel. I said, I don't usually do this, but I'm going to reach out, you know, to Mr. McMahon. Everyone knows who the big three are, and tell them how I feel. And then I sent another text, and I said, hey, look, I know Daniel's not a hugger. And I don't know if you guys knew this, but the whole hug it out thing began as a rib on him because he is strictly a handshake guy.
Oh, so never knew that.
It's kind of funny that he was the hugging guy when backstage he's not. I said, but tell him if I was there, I'd give him a big hug and tell him how wrong I think this whole thing is. And then I said to my son, I said, okay, now how do I copy and paste my next message? I was gonna show her what I was sending to Vince. And then my son looked at me and goes, Dad, you just did send that message to Vince. So my first message in about 2 years to Vince was about hugging Daniel Bryan, and my second message was, as you might have guessed, that last message wasn't for you.
Oh, geez.
Hope you're good, Mick, you know. So I did get caught up in it, and maybe that's a good sign, you know, when you have the guys getting emotionally invested in outcomes, that's probably a good thing.
So what was your idea for Ziggler? Because he could use it about right now.
I thought that when Amy Schumer admitted on national television that the reason that she broke up with Dolph was that I have to be careful, my son's in the room, that
the sex was too physical, I'll say it.
Love was too athletic.
Yeah.
I thought that would play perfectly into his character, and I had written out a fairly detailed proposal on how they could capitalize on that. Especially because I know Amy a little bit, and she would have been more than happy to come on the show and maybe even participate in a
really
tag team. Yeah. And
oh,
I
wow
thought the potential for
that's not the worst thing.
No,
for her, it's some exposure, but she's relatively known enough to where.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, she's really, you know, taken off. She has her own show on TV, and I thought the idea of Dolph and Vicky at that time against Amy and someone else could have gotten some mainstream attention.
Yeah.
So yeah, I threw that out there and didn't.
Quite an irony that everybody thinks he does too much. What are your thoughts on that situation? Because you know, whenever you see Dolph doing all this stuff, and you get, you know, does he really need to do all this? And then you have people saying, don't you remember Shawn Michaels, all this stuff that he did? Well, I mean, when you see Dolph, I mean, what are your thoughts on the amount of stuff that he does in his matches, bumps and otherwise?
Well, he does remind me of Shawn Michaels. You know, I think he's one of the best. I don't know what happened to that run. You know, I don't know if the concussion cut it short and someone decided that, you know, he wasn't their guy. I would like to, you know, one of the things I liked in WWE is you did get the ball and you got a chance to run with it. And it seemed like it was taken away from him fairly quickly. And
very
I'd love
quick
to see what he could do with another, you know, with a legitimate run.
You know, now you brought up the network. I guess you're watching it somewhat. I mean, as far as the thing goes, do you watch a lot of old stuff or new stuff, or when you're home do you watch it? Does your family watch it?
I watch what they have on. I don't think first of all, I don't know if I know how to use the PlayStation yet, so I don't actually know how to go. What is it on? I don't know how to.
So you watch the live feed all the time.
If they're watching something, I'll watch along with them, and I get to see a lot of cool things. And I, as a general, never go back and watch things that I've done, but I've got to see a couple things, and I, you know, made some mental notes on them. But it's great. I mean, I can't imagine a big wrestling fan not taking advantage of that in some way.
Yeah.
Was there a reason that you never went back and watched your own stuff besides the obvious of being too critical?
Oh, man. You know, when I did go back and watch my own stuff was in 2004, when I felt like I had fallen short in that WrestleMania match where The Rock and I took on Evolution. And I had that 1 month to get ready for the match with Randy Orton and try to, you know, attack it with a much different attitude. I went back and watched a lot of my stuff. And I was especially—I wasn't critical. I was really pretty touched by how hard I worked, especially on independent shows. You know, like the stuff that Sabu and I did. You know, in Las Vegas and other places. You know, watch matches that you know I'd never seen before, and I thought, man, well, that's why I. You know, like it was those type of efforts that got me. You know, that led to the advancements in other places, and I kind of lost track of that, you know, especially as I got older. It was like, okay, I just, you know, I was really cognizant of my physical limitations and trying to work within them and forgot, you know, some of the really creative stuff I did and in addition to some of the wild stuff.
Would you say that Mind Games match with Shawn was your best match of all time, or do you have another one you like better?
Yeah, I like the Backlash match with Randy Orton in 2004, but partially because it was like a real, you know, moral victory, and because I was coming back from what I thought was a, you know, psychological setback. But as far as actual matches, I think that was the best one, and I wish I'd thought outside the box, you know, and approached more of my matches that way because, and been in that kind of shape because I was, you know, I was keeping up with a much, you know, much better, smaller athlete for almost 30 minutes. So yeah, I was in pretty good condition for that one.
Now, Randy Orton is not the kind of guy that you envision taking a bump into thumbtacks, but he did.
Yeah, he did.
And I wasn't expecting it. I mean, take us through like that whole scenario, the idea of it approaching Randy. Did Randy say, like, I got this great idea? How did this whole thing happen?
Man, can I kind of pass on that? Because that was kind of like a close moment for the two of us. And I don't know if he wants me sharing it, you know, but it was a real situation of trust. Like, he was really trusting me promo-wise because he had some guys in his ears that told him I was making him look bad, making him look weak. And I was just saying, Randy, please trust me. You know, like, a heel is at his most dangerous when he's been threatened. You know, like, your back's against the wall. There's nothing wrong as a heel with showing concern and fear. Not everyone has to be the cool heel. That's when you're at your most dangerous. And it was really, I noted this in my Hall of Fame speech, that to this day, the fact that he considers that to be his best match is really, flattering. And I don't want to get into it, but it was just really nice to have somebody who, despite being told otherwise, completely trusted that I was doing what was in his best interest. And that night, oddly enough, I got off the red eye. My luggage was lost in Toronto, and I had to immediately go to the hospital where my son was. He was in the hospital for a few days, so it was a really anticlimactic conclusion to what was a great match. I didn't have that chance to kind of bask in the afterglow like you like to after these things. I think I threw up in a Tim Hortons parking lot because I had a concussion and then caught the red eye and went to the hospital. And then that night I watched Raw, and it was like, it was very clear, you know, that trusting in me had paid off because the audience had a completely different perception of him, you know. So that was, that one match meant a lot to me and to him. And that's when things are working really well. That's the outcome everybody benefits.
I'm not a fan of self-mutilation, really, and bumping into thumbtacks and that sort of thing. But when you have a guy, this is what I always got out of the match. When you got a guy like Randy Orton, who's like a good-looking guy, he's pushed as kind of a pretty boy, and sometimes you'll get a guy, I hate to throw Miz out there again, but you don't watch The Miz and feel there's any toughness there, you know what I mean? And for Orton to go out there and he ends up taking that big bump into the thumbtacks, I think for a lot of fans, it was like, that's what he needed for the toughness deal. And they just looked at him completely differently afterwards. And, you know, I don't know if necessarily, you know, me personally, I'd want to have to take a bump into thumbtacks for that, but it worked for him.
It did. I mean, the sad truth is it wouldn't work for anyone now because we've all seen it so many times.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was, it was really important in that, you know, you can't feign that look of shock. And apparently, even when I had thrown him off the stage and prepared for the elbow, which was one of the two or three best I've done in my career, his comment, hold on, I've got my son doing live, hold on just a second. His comment to Mike Chioda was, Chioda, those thumbtacks were not a good idea. So he was feeling it for sure.
Once it starts, it's like there's no turning back, right?
No.
Have you ever had a guy that was like, okay, we got thumbtacks planned, but you know what? Let's just kind of take that part out.
And then Edge did the same thing in 2006, and it was really effective for him as well. You know, allowed people to see him in a somewhat different light. And that was one of the things that I also found flattering was when, even though we didn't use those extremes and foreign objects, that Shawn Michaels felt that Mind Games did the same thing for him. So that was, you know, that was part of what I was, you know, that was part of what I did, I guess, was altered perceptions a little bit.
As a guy who's the hardcore legend, and you noted that you can't really do this anymore because everyone's seen it so many times, let's say there is a guy today. Let's just pull out Miz here. What can Miz do to up his toughness quotient in 2014?
One thing he's going to have to win some matches.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, there's still room. I mean, if take a like a Bray Wyatt maybe, and put him in a, I think part of it comes down to the promos. You know, that you have to believe that the guy believes in the promos, and it's tough to believe in your own promos when you're not doing them yourself. You know, it's. And I don't mean to knock the New Way, because there's, you know, I understand there's a reason why, you know, things have to be a little more tightly scripted. And I think a lot of that goes back to The Rock and I going 16 minutes over on our This Is Your Life segment. I really do. I don't know. But you certainly could have him. I mean, they did the same thing with Jeff Hardy in a much less graphic way, where he kept coming back from adversity, and you know, I got the handshake from the Undertaker. Believe it or not, the knock on Jeff, despite the stuff that he had done that should have been real proof to the contrary, was that he wasn't, you know, he wasn't tough, or that he was a pretty boy. And so I think they consciously went about changing that perception, and they could. It depends on whether the, you know, the commitment is there. Hey, do you mind if I interrupt you guys just so we can talk about the raffle, just so I don't forget?
Oh yeah, yeah, we'll talk.
Go ahead.
That's my main. I am excited, and I'm really worried. You know, and honestly, I was the thing that kept me from canceling my flights to New Orleans, and you know, taking drastic steps after a couple of the disappointments I had with the show. Was I was like, I've got this raffle, and we hadn't done it the year before because everything was designed around Hurricane Sandy, and I didn't want to step on that. But, you know, RAIN is the anti-sexual assault group that I volunteered with for 2 years, and I can't do that anymore. But I was able to raise, you know, not I was, along with the help of, you know, 2,500 people who kicked in, we were able to raise $60,000 2 years ago. That's a lot of money for a relatively small organization. You know, I believe their entire budget is under $2 million for the year, and so with social media growing and my numbers up, I thought that if I got some cooperation from some of the guys and some of the divas, that we had a chance to meet that. And so I just got the news yesterday. We're already several thousand dollars ahead of where we finished in 2012. We still have 6 days left, and I think that's in large part due to the two Raws that that we've seen. But when the show was, it was not, didn't seem to be attracting interest, you know, and I could, you know, that was interest, lack of interest reflected in the small numbers of the, you know, people who were joining the raffle. I started going out and trying to make it like the ultimate, you know, vacation for any wrestling fan. And so, you know, I contacted Ring of Honor, and they were great. And they gave me, you know, two VIP backstage meet and greet tickets. And I remember Gabe Sapolsky when he was, you know, 16 or 17 and doing Sabu's fan club, you know, in the ECW. And everyone I approached was just great, you know. And, like, out of the blue, I just, I saw the Velvet Sky poster with the Derek Jeter jersey. So I contacted her, asked if she would donate a signed poster and a hug. And I swear to you, we went up $7,000 that day. And wow. I think it had a lot to do with Velvet and her hug. And so everywhere I went, people were just, you know, just going out of their way to help me make this the greatest vacation ever. And then I realized that, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever been to the theme parks in Orlando, or you guys are out there in California, really no reason to come to Orlando, but they're always filled with people from the UK and Ireland. And when you go over to the UK, you know, they advertise these great vacation deals, but they're like 2 week vacations, what they call holidays. And so I wanted to give them the option of expanding the holiday by being flexible with the flight, so that they weren't, you know, reined into just a 4 day window. And then I thought, man, I got vacation points. Like, we'll just turn it into a Disney vacation. So if someone wins this thing, you know, it really is ridiculous how good the package is. And all they have to do, it's really simple, go to Rain, rainn.org/raffle, and it takes you right there with all the prizes. And even if you forget the raffle, it's just Rain, rainn.org, and then you can find it and click onto it. But I'm really excited. We got the numbers yesterday. And I think a lot of people are just, you know, there's much caught up in the spirit of doing something important and having it as a positive reflection on wrestling fans as they are thinking of winning it.
I've just tweeted out
the guy who a couple of years ago that won your thing, and he wrote a big article about it. And just
I tried to. When things were looking slow a couple of weeks ago, I put that out there. And there's a problem, you know. Social media is great in a lot of ways, but it's not the place to read long articles. But I thought one of the reasons why people weren't getting enthusiastic is it looked too good to be true. And so we posted his blog, and it was what I loved is he kept saying just when he thought it couldn't get any better,
yeah,
it got better. And it was one of these things, like I said, it was like, wait, this is. It sounds too good to be true, but pretty much you can do anything. You know, you can do anything you want once you hit New Orleans. Everything is open. And if the winner, you know, I mean, if we find out the winner has something they want to do that's not on there, I'll make sure it gets done. Even if it, you know, a few phone calls is probably all it would take.
I tweeted out the link, so if you go to my Twitter, at Brian Alvarez, it's up there. It'll take you right to the page. It is a $2, each ticket is $2, but there's a minimum of 5 tickets, so $10 will get you into this raffle. And when he's talking about this this prize here...
Tell about the prize.
It's going to take a while.
It has all the list.
All right.
It's totally ludicrous how cool this package is. But go ahead and
I will try to read all of this off. This could take a while. You get 2 prime tickets to WrestleMania, and these are seats that normally are only available to the WWE family members. 2 tickets to Raw, the Hall of Fame induction, and any session of WrestleMania access. You get 2 tickets to your show, Mick, an evening with Mick Foley.
No, that's not happening. So that one's off.
All right, that one's off.
Sorry.
However, don't worry about that. How about the breakfast?
Breakfast is on.
Breakfast is on.
Yeah.
You got a breakfast. You have an exclusive lunch hosted by Brie Bella and other surprise divas. If you're a big fan of Total Divas, never know who will be there. You've got a signed Velvet Sky poster and the personal hug that Mick talked about. You get a DDP yoga workout with DDP himself. He's going to take you through this workout, which that's a vacation in itself. You got 2 VIP tickets to Ringside, an evening with Jim Ross.
Wow.
Yeah. You get an original 20x32 Rob Schomburger piece of art featuring the wrestler of your choice.
Which is really, I mean, that's really cool. You guys know the Rob Schomburger stuff. And he had suggested a 20x32 original of me. And then this just came out of nowhere. He went through my agent, and then I saw the thing, and I was like, this is great, but there's a pretty good chance I'm not their favorite wrestler, you know, like, can you open it up? So he can do anybody. So if you have a favorite wrestler, Rob Schomburger will do an amazing original piece of artwork of that person.
That's right. You've got a winner and a guest getting transportation from anywhere in the world. You get transportation between the airport and the hotel. You get 4 nights lodging at a 3-4-star hotel within a mile of the Superdome, April 4th through April 8th. $1,000 spending money, $1,000.
Wow.
VIP packages from Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, and WrestleCon. That is not all. You've got a Walt Disney World Orlando trip. You get economy class airfare to Orlando and back. On Saturday for this trip, you get round-trip transportation. You get 4 nights lodging in a 1-bedroom villa, the Kidani Village at the Animal Kingdom Lodge. Includes bedroom, living room, kitchen, etc. 4-day park hopper pass for 2, so you can come and go as you please. And you get to meet Disney expert Scotty Too Hottie for a behind-the-scenes tour. As the only nerd/superstar of this magnitude would have access to this, as you note here. And At the end of the day, you get a cash prize of $5,000, which pays the tax liability for this raffle, so you pay no taxes on it.
Right.
And so there you go. That's
an amazing, gigantic deal.
Yeah, thanks for it. Sounds good when you spell it out there. You know, it is. It's great, and I think people are realizing that now. And it's really, Rain was really excited with the participation, and you know, so people who listen, take a chance. You know, I mean, the odds of winning are now like 1 in 3,000. But it's again the idea that a bunch of wrestling fans can possibly make $100,000 for a for a good cause. When you take it, and I'm not knocking the efforts WWE made because they did an amazing job with the Susan G. Komen Foundation. But man, there was a lot of TV time and T-shirts and promos, and this is just something that's there's no advertising budget. It's just something people are doing, spreading the word and gaining, a good chunk of that, for a much, smaller organization, that really needs the money. So I'm deeply appreciative. I know those, the people at Rain are deeply appreciative, and it will help, I'm not exaggerating, literally thousands of people will benefit from.
And it's flying you from anywhere in the world. So for those asking on Twitter, yes, it is open to Europeans. It's open to anybody, and
it's got to be a major. They have to get to their closest major city, and then we'll take it from there.
Sure.
And now, it is the complete luck of the draw. Like, we're hoping that it's somebody from, from Georgia. it'll be a lot easier, but it is open. It is open to anybody in the world. And last year was a Scotsman living in Canada, and I have a feeling it's going to be a UK person. I think that they
Are they flooding the thing?
They're just such big fans, and as you've seen on the Raws the night after Mania, they kind of invade the 20,000 seat arenas are seem to be taken up by at least 50% UK fans, and it just creates a crazy atmosphere. So if I was guessing, I would say someone from the UK, but it could be someone from anywhere.
Well, you have a large number of people from the UK listening right now, because I'm looking at the stats. And
right.
Yes, they are rabid. And the as noted, I tweeted out the link. It is good until March 24th, this coming Monday at 9:00 p.m. Eastern. So you have a few days left to buy tickets, as noted, $2 each, but you have to buy 5. So for $10, you're donating to a very good cause, and you have a chance to win the whole package. So head up there.
This is going to be me on Sunday and Monday calling and texting the WWE superstars. Hey, Randy, remember what I did for you in 2004?
That's right.
Send out this link.
That's right.
Hey, John Cena, remember when I stuck up for you and got a lot of flack for it? Send out this link. So I will. I mean, I will literally be trying to, and I have been. A lot of the guys have been great about it. And in the this final 2 hours, two or three hours leading up to it, I hope we have a big surge. So appreciate you guys letting me talk about it.
Now there are obviously a million charities in the world. What? I mean, you've been helping out Rain for a long time now. When did you first hook up with him? And what were the circumstances? Why this charity of all of them?
I started out with a meeting with a singer, Tori Amos, who I've written about in a few of my books as an inspirational source. And after I met her, I guess you could say I was slightly enamored. But that happens quite a bit to a lot of people. And I think, after you meet someone and they make an impression on you, you Google them, you watch a couple of the movies they were in. And in this case, I went to her website. I'd never actually I'd been on a website, but never gotten to one myself. I'd had to ask my kids, hey, can you show me this website? And in this case, I wanted to see if a photo, it was 6 weeks after I met her that, the guy who booked me on the show had taken this really great candid photo, not the posed photo, but a great candid photo. And I'd show you how long ago this was. I didn't have any photos on MySpace. and I wanted to put a photo up there. I wanted to put that photo. But that would seem like, I don't know, this sounds strange, like a breach of trust to just throw a photo up there without someone's permission. And I was attempting to look on her website to see if she may have put a photo of me up there, which would have been implied permission. And there was no photo of me up there, by the way. But I saw the link to Rain, and I kind of figured out how to use a link that night. And I went over there, and I started reading about it. And up until I read about it, I thought, you know, obviously this is a serious, you know, this is a very notable cause, but it was just, I thought, a cause just for women and people directly affected by it. And the more I read, the more I thought, you know, this is exactly where someone like me can make a difference, because I'm exactly the type of person that wouldn't seem to fit in. And I think, you know, through those, especially the 2 years where I was actively volunteering, you know, not only making the hands-on difference, but creating awareness was a big deal. And yeah, allowed me, I think, to make you know, a positive contribution well above and beyond what I did as a volunteer, and well above and what I was able to contribute financially.
Now, what is, just so everyone would know, what is technically your status with WWE, and you know, as far as appearing on TV, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
I was just Barry Bloom sent me the it's called the Estranged Son contract. You're still part of the family, but you're the guy no one wants to see at the reunions. I'm not officially contracted to WWE anymore, but I'll be at WrestleMania. I've got three events I'm doing. I did two appearances for the company 2 weeks ago, and I even asked. I was like, you guys know I don't run under contract. They're like, yeah, we're just told that. Like, so why are you doing it? And I was like, well, I still, you know, like you guys, and it's an Islanders and a Knicks game. It's not like it's the worst, you know, appearance ever done. And if they ask me to do the charity events, I'll be glad to do them. But I like the idea that I can book my own schedule, and that I can, you know, I can say no to an event if I can't do it. So I don't know. Moving forward, we may work a lot together with the network. We may work only a little bit, or they may choose not to, you know, not to do much with me at all. But I'm still a fan. You know, like, I'm still, first and foremost, I had to make a decision years ago whether I was going to stay away from the TV on principle, or whether I was going to enjoy those hours with my kids every week. And I chose to enjoy the hours. And so I do like the show, and I do get caught up in it. And I am essentially still a fan after all these years. But I can't tell you what I'll be doing in the future. I have no idea.
Now,
can you,
you did a show with them. You know, one of your comedy shows, it was filmed, I think in Smithtown, New York, was it?
Yeah.
So what's, is that going to be for the network? Is that going to be?
No,
for
you know what, man, that was a big disappointment, because I thought it was, as soon as I saw the two cameras, I knew it wasn't going to be a big deal. I honestly thought this was something they would really get as an extension of what they did, you know, as part of an entertainment company. And I think, you know, with them not following through with the show, I'm going to go and do my own thing. I think they've shown me that they're not interested, maybe because they just have so many other things they're doing. But I am proceeding as if they are not interested. They can, you know, they're more than welcome to surprise me, but I'm going to proceed. But the shows are going really well. And that's one other thing I should add, is that I'm all over the place. You know, I'm in some ways busier than the guys on the road. And my schedule's up at realmcfoley.com, and I think I'm hitting Connecticut. I'm doing my first independent shows where I can sign. I can't even referee anymore physically, but I can sign and, you know, do the I get to be an enforcer at ringside with the best of them. And then I've got, you know, shows coming up in, Connecticut and Maryland and Virginia and Indiana and Illinois, North Carolina, Florida, Ohio.
This is a full schedule. I'm looking at the website right now.
Yeah, it's pretty
fast. You're doing 300 dates a year like the old days.
No, it seems I did 19 shows in 13 days. Last month I did 13 days. And, you know, every one of the shows comes with the meet and greet. So when I'm out there, I'm working, you know. I do the PR for it. Like, I take it seriously. And when people show up and they're in a room, like, Dave, you've had a chance to see the show. Like, I don't just go through the motions, you know. Like, I really enjoy myself out there, and it feels very much like being in the ring without taking the bumps.
Now, there's a full list, by the way. If you go to Real McFoley, realmcfoley.com/event, have you had a chance yet when doing these? Have you come back to a market yet? And how has it drawn, so to speak, the second time as compared to the first time?
And also, like, if you do go back, I mean, do you kind of have notes and memories of what you did, so like you don't repeat material, or do you?
Yeah, I'll make sure it's almost an entirely new show by the time I go back. As a matter of fact, I just sent my publicist an email yesterday. Said after the April 10th, you know, we're going to change the name of the tour, and it'll be an entirely. When I say entirely, like, I may, you know, include little bits, you know, like, but the you know, the themes will be different, and it'll be a very much different show. And I used to try to change it up from one night to the next anyway. And, you know, for example, on a couple nights ago, on the 16th was the 20th anniversary of losing my ear with against Vader. So that clearly played a big part in that evening's shows. We've come back. We've done well in the markets that we've, Long Island, we've hit several times, and Los Angeles several times, and not too many of the smaller markets. I'll be going back to Charlotte for the second time in only about 7 months, so that should be interesting. But there are so many markets I haven't hit at all, you know, and the word is out, you know, that you can put me there, and that I'll draw on nights when clubs are either not open, or they'd have an open mic night, or something else that wouldn't put many butts in seats, and I have been, which I'm really proud of.
Can you, before we wrap it up, I got two questions here. First off, you were talking about doing stuff for WWE here and there. Can you kind of give us a behind the scenes on these pay-per-view panels? Because sometimes they put together three guys, it seems like, completely at random. You cut to them every match or so, and they talk for like 10 seconds, then they disappear. And I mean, take us through this process. What are you guys doing for the 3 hours? I mean, I need to know more about this panel.
Well, I think sometimes it does look like they're put together at random because they may not get the choices they want. I think in a few of the occasions, you know, when I've been up there with Brett and Booker, you know, and people felt we gelled really nicely. And I think when I was up there with, I think it was me, Booker, and Miz, and we had some, you know, we had good chemistry between the three of us. I think it adds to the feel. It's kind of like the pregame show of a football or a basketball game. I'll admit that we don't do much during the show. And, you know, when we have the chance to either leave and come back, I choose just to stay there. You know, I stay and watch the matches, and I enjoy myself. But there is not a lot going on during the show. But
I mean, do you watch, like, the Mick Foley match, and just all of a sudden you're like, I can't believe they did that? And they're like, calm down, Mick. We're going live here in a second.
So yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't get as carried. Yeah, I don't get as carried away. I think I do a pretty good job. They've asked me back to do it a couple times, and I was asked to do the Raw pre-show a couple weeks ago, and I couldn't make it, or maybe I just said I couldn't just to prove that I could say I couldn't. I'm not sure what it was.
Now, what do you think of Renee Young? Because I think she's awesome.
I love Renee. Yeah, I think she adds a lot to it. She's got a great personality, and she's been great on The Score. You know, I think that was what she's done in Toronto for a long time. And I threw out posted a photo of me and Renee in Toronto when she was much younger, and I appeared to have a live animal on my head. I just don't know what kind of hair problems I was going through at that time. And so when she joined WWE, I think she became a valuable asset. I miss Matt Stryker. I really do.
I don't.
Wow. No, you didn't care for Matt, huh?
No, it's not. I don't. I haven't even thought about it, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, when I watch the pay per views, I miss that analyst point of view.
But which one? Because he had quite the swing.
There were times when I thought Matt Stryker was really good, and there were times where I was not a fan of Matt Stryker.
May have to do with confidence levels, and your confidence can go up and down depending on
various issues.
The various issues in your ear at the time, you know, and that was the reason I stopped doing it. I don't know. I haven't talked to Matt about that. I just know that when I listened to him, I said, man, I kind of miss that, that style of announcing on the show these days.
Now, as far as like your schedule going forward and everything, I mean, do you have any projects that you're working on besides just doing the touring and everything, or is there like in the Santa movie and all that?
Yeah, the Santa movie's a big deal to me. I've got another documentary that I'm helping produce, and I mean, it sounds strange. It's called Slut. It's about slut shaming in schools and society. So it kind of goes hand in hand with what I've done with Rain, and usually young girls, but not always, who are devastated to the point of taking their own lives because of, the cyberbullying and, the video age has been just terrible. The people, there's stuff out there that never goes away. I hate to just keep reinforcing the importance of being Santa, but I'm kind of, keeping my entire December and parts of November cleared so I can do Santa stuff. So I love the idea that I can do that if I want to, and I do.
One more thing I was going to ask you is, now I just forgot.
By the way, the Santa thing, we're going to have our premiere, I think, June 19th in Philadelphia. We're going to do it at a theater in Philadelphia, I think on a Friday night. And then on Saturday, we're going to also show it at Wizard World in Philadelphia. And then we'll have a Wizard World showing in August for people who are interested in being part of that.
Okay. All right. If you remember the question, Dave, you can jump in. But the website, there's a lot of them here. Real Mick Foley is a great place to go. And that has information on everything here. And in fact, if you go up to the front page right there at the top, it says WrestleMania Raffle. So you can click on that. It'll take you right to the raffle page. Don't forget, the raffle is open until Monday at 9 Eastern. So you have plenty of time to buy a ticket, but at the same time, you don't have a lot of time. So get up there and do it right now. List of upcoming events. There are a bunch of them. Plymouth is coming up on the 21st. Webster, Massachusetts, 22nd. List goes on and on. A lot of different shows. And everything you really want to know about Mick is going to be up there on his website. And Mick, I'll let you plug your Twitter, anything else you'd like as well, and let people know how to contact you.
Hey, just remember that I keep it real. So it's anywhere you go. It's realmickfoley.com. Twitter is at realmickfoley. Facebook, facebook.com/realmickfoley. And that's probably the three best ways to keep in touch with what I'm doing.
Have you run any other Mick Foleys in your life that are upset that you don't consider them real Mick Foleys?
I haven't run into them, but there were several out there. In addition to the couple guys who do the independents with the slight variation on my name, there's the Nick Foley and the Dick Foley out there. I cannot imagine that Al Snow has encountered those same problems. I don't know if anybody's making the indie rounds as the fake Al Snow, but he's the real Al Snow as well. Unfortunately, it is the only way to, you know, you get verified, and that helps a lot. But there are a lot of imposters out there. You know, I'll tell you what, I ended up reconnecting with Stacey Keibler through a fake Stacey Keibler, because this is back in the MySpace days. You know that Stacey Keibler got in touch with me. I went over to her site, and there's hundreds of photos, and everything was Stacey, 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 and it was something I said about Test, like a memory I had about her and Test, you know, where she would always make a big deal out of me in front of him in a teasing way, because she knew it bothered him in a teasing way. And she, like, ran in front of everybody. Mick Foley, this is, I think, WrestleMania was at SummerSlam, and jumped in my arms and just to see Test scowling. And it was clear the person had no idea what I was talking about. And I cut, you know, a MySpace version of a Cactus Jack promo on her. And I was able to find out through Tori Wilson that she did not have a MySpace, and was able actually to get in touch with the real Stacey only because of my interaction with the fake Stacey. So I guess they're not all bad, right?
I guess not. Okay, I guess
now,
not.
I got to ask you this before I forget it again. The TV show Wife Swap. Tell me about, like, I mean, I remember I watched the show, saw your family, your wife go to the other family. I mean, what's your memories of that? What was doing that show like?
Well, this is right after my tweet heard around the world, where I likened my empty arena match with The Rock to a TNA house show. And
I remember that.
I had offered TNA to, you know, I'd offered to leave. I'd lost faith in the company, and the look on shock on Terry Taylor's face was priceless, because no one willingly gives up, you know, 5 months of their contract. And we'd agreed to work through it, you know, until September. And then once I sent that out, they took me up on it, which was, you know, I was kind of a shock, because I wasn't expecting it. And so when that opportunity came up, and I realized I could get back quite a bit of that, you know, 5 months in a, you know, 1 week project, I did it, but only after finding out from Dee Snider that they really were not looking to make people look bad. It was ABC. It wasn't the cable version. They really just want to see how different people managed to get along. And so we kind of went into it knowing, A, that, you know, it could come out badly for us, and B, that we were ultimately going to be in the hands of our fate was going to be in the hands of the editors. But we really liked – the one thing I regret is that it did not come across accurately how much we liked Cheryl, the fiance of Antonio Sabato Jr., and how much she liked us, because they, you know, they kind of have the show, you know, where,
well, it's like they create an adversarial, exaggerated
thing. And then at the end they come together and find common ground. But there was no conflict. As a matter of fact, I wish that I just, you know, when you look for moments that are real, she went to give her rules, and I've never seen this, and to me it would have been a really touching moment. And she broke down, and she said she couldn't believe that she walked into this house 4 days earlier as a stranger, that we'd made her feel like part of the family. And I thought that was really nice. And it was really, that was how we felt the entire time of the filming. We really enjoyed having her there, and we're sorry to see her go. But I understand they, you know, we are the sloppy Foleys, but we're not as sloppy as we say.
Oh, yeah. Well, I could tell that was exciting. I will say this. I thought your wife came off tremendous.
Oh, my wife was great. Yeah, she was really good. She was really good. And I was lucky in that you're not supposed to know who your person is. And I only found out the night before, just through a mistake. And I was luckily, I was able to tell my wife, because I didn't know who he was. He's one of those guys where, you know, when you say his name, Antonio Sabato Jr., people either draw blank or women, you know, almost faint. And so luckily I was able to react, so that when she said, you know, my fiance is Antonio Sabato Jr., and I was able to be, as in, the most handsome man who's ever lived in the history of the world. And it was, you know, it was fun. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I know that when Roddy called me, you know, I'd never met Roddy's wife, but I spoke to him on, you know, on like a conference call for about 45 minutes and told, and I believe I spoke with Rick and his agent as well about my experiences and how they'd been, you know, really positive there. And I think that had something to do with them doing it. And I also, you know, told them, you know, honestly, I told them what I made and what I thought, you know, the high end was and what they could expect. So hopefully they had a pretty good experience as well.
Yeah, that one was, to me, that one was a little bit more contrived in the sense that I known Rick and Roddy have been friends forever and ever and ever. And it's like, okay, that like with you and Antonio Sabato, you could go this like a random, you know what I mean? It's like a random thing. How would you know him? How would, you know what I mean? But Rick and Roddy, yeah. It's like, you know, it's like best friends from 30 years ago. I mean,
yeah, and I think everyone had a hard time thinking that Rick went in with a fake mustache.
I didn't. I bought every moment of that.
And that he was not only, they say he's grocery shopping for the first time, he's in a convenience store. And I'm pretty sure Rick spent in a convenience store.
I would think like growing, you know, in that Carolinas territory almost every night after the match.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And not with a mustache on. So it was still. I mean, I still thought theirs was fun, but I thought, you know, matching up the two opposites, and in our case, you know, the Cheryl and Antonio had a legitimate argument and broke up at the table. And you see, you got the guy, the Calvin Klein model, asking the wrestler what to do. And I said, I think you need to apologize. He said, but I didn't do anything wrong. And I said, I've been married 22 years. Like, you end up apologizing you know, when you know you're not right. So, yeah, it was pretty cool. It was cool. You know what was nice also is the kids had a good experience. But they weren't on so much, and because they weren't on a weekly basis, they didn't become part of people's lives, you know. And there was no negative fallback. There was no paparazzi, you know, no pressure on them. And so we all kind of looked at it like, hey, that was a lot of fun, and we enjoyed it.
All right, everybody. The website is Real McFoley. Everything is Real McFoley at Real McFoley on Twitter, Real McFoley on Facebook. You can head up there and check that out. And don't forget the raffle. It's all up there on the website. You've got until Monday. It's a great cause, an amazing package. So check it out. And Mick, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
having
me on. And enjoy your mania.
That's right. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you again very soon.